Welcome back to Lungcast, a monthly respiratory health podcast series from the American Lung Association and medical news site HCP Lung. I'm your host, Dr. Albert Rizzo, Chief Medical Officer of the American Lung Association. If you're watching this on YouTube, be sure to subscribe to our channel at Lungcast to get updates on new episodes and interview segments. If you're listening to this on your podcast player, you can do the same thing there. You can also get more Lungcast episodes and segments on hcplive.com and lung.org. As has been our tradition since we launched this show in 2020, our November episode this year is dedicated to Lung Cancer Awareness Month. Over the years, we've hosted several world-leading pulmonologists, oncologists, and researchers to discuss the intricacies of lung cancer screening, diagnostics, and management strategies. But we've never hosted a patient until today. Today, we are featuring a special interview with Christy Fisher, a four-time survivor of non-smoking-related lung cancer, who also works as an active community volunteer with the American Lung Association. Whereas our myriad of past lung cancer conversations have delved into clinical and scientific parameters of disease, Christy provides the patient perspective, the emotional, as well as the physical and clinical journey of her multiple fights against cancer. It's a story that any caregiver can learn from, and that any person could derive inspiration. For Lung Cancer Awareness Month, we hope you enjoy celebrating Christy's story with us. Well, thank you for joining us today. Christy, why don't you tell us how and when you found out that you had a diagnosis of lung cancer?
So I was originally diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer, actually, in 2006. So basically how that went about was I always did anything I possibly could to stay in shape. I was a big runner. I was an athlete in high school and in college. I actually went to college on a basketball and track scholarship. And so I always did small things to stay in shape, like, you know, park really far from the door and walk in, or I would take the stairs instead of the elevator. And what I discovered was I would try to walk up a flight of stairs. And when I would get to the top of that flight of stairs, I literally could not breathe. I mean, I would have to double over and really have to catch my breath. And, you know, being a runner all my life and a non-smoker all my life. And also, you know, I was only 38 years old at the time, but I was experiencing chest pain, shortness of breath, coughing, wheezing, back pain. And I was like, something is wrong with me. So I took myself to my primary care physician and she, you know, she tested me for asthma. She checked my heart. She checked my spine and she did take some x-rays. And, you know, she basically said, you know what, everything looks fine. Why don't you just take Prilosec for 30 days? She thought it was like an acid reflux kind of thing. And said, why don't you just take Prilosec for 30 days and then come back? And that was on a Tuesday. And then that Friday, I received a phone call from the x-ray technician that said they found several spots in my lungs and that they recommended I have more testing. So it was in, you know, in 2006, like 17 years ago.
Right. So once you had that diagnosis, what were some of your initial thoughts and feelings? It's quite a diagnosis to receive.
I know. So, yeah. So when they first called me and told me that they found the spots, you know, that was on a Friday and there's nothing you can do on a Friday, you know, so you have that whole weekend to sit around and kind of go, okay, what's going on here? You know, what could this possibly be? They were concerned, which made me concerned. And so, you know, come Monday morning, I just became my own advocate and I just dug in and I just got to the bottom of this. And so I ended up going through 3 months of testing in 5 different hospitals in the city I live in, trying to find out what was wrong with me. And because they were like, there's no way she could have lung cancer. You know, she's healthy. Like I said earlier, I didn't smoke. I've never smoked. I didn't grow up in a smoking household. I never worked in a facility where there was smoking or asbestos or anything like that. So the idea of me having lung cancer was just really unheard of. So I ended up going through 3 months of testing to find out what was wrong with me. And so that was really hard, the 3 months of testing, waiting to find out what was wrong. So by the time I was actually diagnosed, I pretty much knew something pretty significant was wrong with me. So when they finally did tell me, I was not surprised. I wasn't shocked. I just kind of, went into, okay, what's next and how are we going to fix this?
Yeah, and that kind of brings up my next question. You told me a little bit about the gap in time from when you first had some symptoms until the ultimate diagnosis, and that certainly can play a lot on your feelings of stress during that time. But once they came up with that diagnosis, did that seem to move things along as far as did you start to get treatment fairly regularly? I mean, quickly or not?
Well, yeah, so once they finally determined what was wrong with me, so that was in September 2006, and so I didn't even start chemotherapy until October. So I ended up, it took about a month for me to, do my research in the city I lived in, determine the best place for me to go for my care, and then come up with a treatment plan. And so that month, knowing that I had stage four lung cancer and it had spread, it had metastasized to my neck, in my sternum, and both of my lungs by the time I was diagnosed. And as a matter of fact, they told me that based on my diagnosis, I had a 2% chance of living the next 4 months. So when they told me that in September, I felt like time was not on my side. So it was really important for me to work quickly and to find out which oncologist I was going to go to as quickly as possible. And so I did land on an oncologist, but because of my diagnosis, my only option for treatment was chemotherapy. Radiation wasn't an option, and either was surgery because it was so spread out throughout my body. So that time, that month, from being diagnosed to starting chemo was like every day I was on the fast track to get to starting chemo as quickly as possible.
Now, before we get to actual the treatment, during this time, what were some of the things going through your family and friends? And during this time, did you experience some of the stigma that unfortunately people with lung cancer often have? Because you self-mentioned you never were a smoker. Well, the ALA says, nobody deserves lung cancer, whether you're a
No.
smoker or not. But stigma is
Right.
still an important thing. And did you have some of that that you experienced as well?
I did, and I still do, to be honest with you, which is crazy considering I've been going through this for 17 years now. The when I first was diagnosed, people who knew me the most and like my closest network, they all knew I wasn't a smoker. But it was those people that were, further away from my initial circle of friends that it's like it's really, as a lung cancer survivor, it's very frustrating that people are like literally sitting on the edge of their seat wanting to know whether or not you were a smoker. And I always wondered myself, does it really matter? Are you going to have less compassion for me? Are you going to give me less treatment options? Are you going to not have less sympathy for me because maybe I did smoke? And so even if I did smoke, which I didn't, that shouldn't matter. I mean, the level of compassion for any other type of cancer out there is just, this feeling of devastation, and they feel so bad for the person, and it's just so terrible. But when you have lung cancer, they listen to your story. But in the back of their mind, so many people, they want to ask you that question, did you smoke? Like it should make a difference. And like they need to know that. And you almost want to say, why do you need to know that? So it's too bad that's the case. And so yes, I still get that. And that is actually one of the reasons that I ended up joining the American Lung Association as a volunteer about 10 years ago now.
Help spread that
So, and
word,
then the second part to that question you had was about my family and friends and their reaction. My circle of friends are, I mean, they're amazing. They're dynamite. And so is my family. And everybody's just been very supportive, and always there for me. And I couldn't have a better network of supporters in my family and my friends, lifting me up at all times during this entire time.
Great. Let me flip it around a little bit. You mentioned your family and friends. How about the physicians you encountered along the way? Did you get a sense of nihilism from them, or was there, it took you a while to find the right group of doctors to treat you?
When I first got diagnosed and I started looking around at where I wanted to go, it's important to make sure you find that person that fits with you and has the same type of mentality and the same type of drive that you do, or is able to manage you the way you want to manage your cancer diagnosis. And so with me, I went to two different people before I landed on who I landed with, and my oncologist has changed multiple times just because physicians move on to a different facility and, and then I move on to somebody else. And so, it's always a situation where you kind of have to set the expectation as the patient and let them understand how you want to be treated and how aggressive you want to be with your cancer diagnosis or how you want to communicate with them. I think that's really important. Whether or not you're aggressive in your approach, or you sit back in your approach, whatever that looks like. But my doctors have always been extremely supportive of me and how I want to handle being diagnosed and being treated.
And I must admit, and for our listeners, if they didn't pick up on it, you are a longtime survivor of stage four lung cancer, which in and of itself is unusual, but is also a reflection of the changing environment in treatment of lung cancer over the last 10 to 15 years, that we now have new forms of therapy, immunotherapy, targeted mutation therapy. So I'd like you to try to talk a little bit about some of the diagnostic things you had to go through, including some of the biopsies, and also some of the changes in therapy that have occurred over the period of time to help keep you at this level of a survivor at this point.
Yeah, so when I was first diagnosed, my oncologist told me that the goal was to prolong my life. That, like I said earlier, the only form of treatment that was available for me at the time was chemotherapy. So there were two different types that he was able to put me on, and so I did those for years, every week, and I'd have about 1 week off during each month. But I did chemotherapy for years, and so his thought about wanting to prolong my life was because he knew there were so many other treatment options that were in research and could potentially come out later that would be a better form of treatment for me. So prolonging my life would potentially allow me to be able to take advantage of those new treatments, which I have. And so I've done chemotherapy. Then I also had an open chest surgery, which I had a tumor in my chest right here. And so they opened up my chest here, and they removed my thymus and my pericardium. And when they did that, they said, performing surgery on a stage four lung cancer patient is unheard of. It's usually not even an option. So I had that, and then came back the third time, and I ended up having chemotherapy again. But then I got diagnosed again in 2018, and for the fourth time. And since then, I've been on immunotherapy until the cancer changed. That immunotherapy no longer worked. And then I was on a targeted therapy, which was a pill that I just got to take from home twice a day, which was fantastic because it's no longer visits into the hospital, no longer getting stuck with a needle, having an IV drip. And then until the cancer changed again, and now I'm on a second targeted therapy now. And so that immunotherapy and the two targeted therapies, when I was originally diagnosed, none of those were available.
Right.
None of those were available as a treatment option. And so the research and the clinical, trials and all the studies that have been done have led us to these new, less invasive, easier to manage treatments that allow you to have such a better quality of life than it was back in 2006.
Right. And during the course of this treatment, Christy, were you offered or in any clinical trials?
I've participated in every single clinical trial they've asked me to participate in.
I'm
So
not
I've
surprised.
had, well, thank you. Yeah. So I, yeah, no, I, every single clinical trial or study or anything they've asked me to do, I have said yes. I think that's part of my purpose for having this disease is to make a difference with it. And I mean, that's just what I do every day. I try to do that. But I participated in clinical trials where, the tumor they removed in my chest, signed a document for them to study that. When I've had biopsies, they've taken additional tissue, extra little chunks of the tumor to study that. They've taken additional blood to study. I've been on diet studies. We also did a study for like communication to help the development of the portals and so forth that we're using today. And so we actually helped with one of those. So I've done everything from diet, educational, laptop studies to biopsies and tissue. And yeah, so anything I've been asked to do, I have done.
Right. Yeah, part of what, the Lung Association, our message for patients with really any disease, but lung cancer in particular, is if you have the option to take part in clinical trials, and many patients as well as physicians don't always follow that road. And it certainly sounds like you had some forward-seeking thinking physicians, and you also had the ability to know that this was a way to be at the cutting edge and potentially benefit from some new things. Were these clinical trials all fairly close to you geographically, or did you have to travel to some of these sites?
No, they were always where I was going.
Good.
So,
Good.
yeah, wherever I was going for my scans, they would either be there, or wherever I was going for my chemotherapy or my immunotherapy, they would be there. So no, I never had to do any additional traveling or anything for them. They just took advantage of me when I would come to their facility, and we would do the clinical trial then. A lot of them were ongoing. A lot of them
Right.
would be ongoing, and we would do an ongoing study, or like I said earlier, it'd be like additional blood or through a biopsy.
Well, certainly the reason you're on this call, and what I certainly have heard your story before, but despite all the busy keeping up with your treatments and clinical trials, you've had time to volunteer for the American Lung Association and get a message out. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got to the American Lung Association, what you've been doing for us over the last few years?
Thank you. Yeah, so when I was diagnosed, I truly believed that God chose me to have this disease for a reason, that he didn't have somebody like me who's very outgoing, very determined, very competitive, very driven, alive, vibrant, full of energy, to get this disease and just sit back and let it overcome me. That wasn't going to happen. So, when I first got diagnosed, I mean, the very first thing that I said to the oncologist that told me that I actually had stage 4 lung cancer, I mean, there was no gap in between him telling me and me asking him what we were going to do. So I've always been very determined that I'm going to overcome this, I'm going to beat it. So with that, through my mentality of beating this disease and talking to so many different people about it, learning that the awareness of lung disease was not there. I mean, I think when I first got started doing any type of volunteering for lung disease or lung cancer, like only 1% of people had like lung health on their radar, that nobody even thought about it. They just assumed, back to that stigma, that you smoked all your life and you brought this on yourself and, it's your fault that you have lung cancer. And so, I was like, I've got to do something about that. That is not the truth. That is not the case. And we do need better research to go towards lung cancer. And we do need more education to go towards lung cancer. And we do need advocacy done to go towards lung cancer. And so I was like, I've got to do something about this. And so about 10 years ago, I reached out to the Kansas City American Lung Association, and I've been a partner with them since then. And I've had the opportunity to go to Washington, D.C. as our Lung Force hero and talk to our state representatives in regards to lung cancer research and needed lung cancer funding. I've been able to share my story with thousands of people through different events with the American Lung Association, whether it's through the gala, the board of directors, sharing my story. And also raising funds, critical funds. I chair the Kansas City Gala every year, and I have since 2017. And every year we blow the records on attendance and also the amount of funds that we raise, and all that's going towards the education, the advocacy, and the research, and teaching people about lung disease and that anybody can get it. It's what they say. It's like, if you have lungs, you can get lung cancer, period. And letting people know that it's not just people who smoked that get this disease, that anybody can. And that was really important to me to do something with it. And so, like I said, I feel like I've been chosen for this. And I think I really feel like I'm making a difference with it too. So I'm proud of the work that I've had the opportunity to do.
And we're so thankful for that work as well.
Thank you.
Based on your experience, what would be a message you give to physicians on about how they should approach the topic of a lung cancer diagnosis with their patients?
So, with me, I just want my doctors to cut to the chase. I mean, get to the point. A lot of times when you do, when I, so I've been, I had three reoccurrences now. And the worst part about when you're told that you have it again, that it's come back and maybe it's in a different location or they have to do a surgery like they've had to do with me. It's like when I go into the room and after I've had my scans, I mean, I really, for me personally, I just want to get to the point and tell me what's wrong with me, because the gap between knowing that there's something wrong and me fixing it and having a game plan, that is when I'm at my not my best. And I am like, I'm very determined to get to that. How are we going to fix it? So that's, with a physician, I think you need to understand your patient and determine, what type of communication works best for them. And my oncologists know how I roll. And so they're very good at just kind of letting me know what's going on. We go and fix it. We come up with a game plan. We move forward and we keep going. So I think that's really important. But I think it's a matter of the patient and the doctor communicating and just having an understanding of the communication, because communication is not a one size fits all approach. You have to come up with what's best for the patient and the doctor together. And I think that's kind of how you move things forward.
Yeah, and you mentioned communication because my next question is what would be the big message to patients when they're diagnosed? I know we often hear that when that first term of lung cancer is brought to the patient's attention, they kind of zone out for a period of time. They don't hear anything else after that because of that
I
setting in.
know.
So, and it sounded like
Yeah.
you had a fairly supportive group around you, family and friends as well. But what would you tell patients when they get this diagnosis?
You
What should they
know, with
do?
me, the thing that was most important to me is that I maintained who I was and what I was doing in my life, that was really important to me. That, as I mentioned earlier, I'm extremely competitive. And so I look at being diagnosed with lung cancer as a competition. I do. I look at it as I won't let it beat me. I won't let it take up any more of my time than it has to. I won't bow down to it. I literally treat it like it's something I'm competing against, because I think if you give up, if you let it overcome you, then it will. So what I would tell anybody is if you're diagnosed with lung cancer or any other form of cancer, keep living. Just keep living your life. Keep moving forward. Keep having something to do. Keep looking for the joy and the happiness in your life and keep finding that great thing that you can do next. And don't sit back and, let it consume you that you have any type of cancer or lung cancer or any form of cancer. Just keep moving forward and being alive and living, and not let it get the best of you. And that's what I do. I mean, I don't spend any time at all thinking about the fact that I have stage four lung cancer and that I'm on treatment right now. Every day I take a form of treatment. It's a targeted therapy, but I don't think about it. I still get up. I mean, I still get up and I do my thing. I volunteer. I walk every day. I go out on my boat. I mean, I've been on some trips in our camper. I live my life. And I think that's what everybody needs to do. Just live your life and work cancer into it as you have to.
What a great message. The reason for this talk today is I hope we've dispelled some of the stigma and nihilism around this disease, but I know we have to keep fighting that. But most importantly, I think this is a good story of encouragement, inspiration, and hope. So thank you and continue the good work and the good success in your treatment, and look forward to more work you're doing for the American Lung Association. Thank you
Thank
again
you
today.
very much. Thank you.